Things weren't giving me much of a choice, but they were at least making it worth my while. If I managed to do this for them, I wouldn't be getting sentenced to death by sacrifice anytime soon by the Blesswood teachers. And I appreciated Cohen's promise that they wouldn't let me die in Topia. It showed that they didn't think of me as being completely expendable, only a little bit expendable, maybe like 50% expendable. I nodded a few times, the lightest of breezes ruffling my curls. Okay, I'll try my best. Just remember that even though they might not be able to sense my energy, I am still clumsy. I mean, things sometimes happen around me. Things that aren't very inconspicuous, like bleeding injuries and shattered valuables, so I can't promise anything. My bravery was almost at a tablespoon now, so I asked, "What do the gods have of yours? What am I getting back?" The others all glanced at Yeo, as though he had magically persuaded me to cooperate. He met their stares with a smirk, twisting his lips, but Sirit was the one who spoke.
"It's just a little cup. Nothing serious. Well, nothing serious to the DOD. But it's very serious to us. DOD took it the last time he was in Manatsal for the Mooncycle Tournament. He won't even realize it's gone if we take it now."
"And who the hell is DOD?" I asked.
"He's a god," Sirit replied, as though I should have already known.
"And, well, seeing as we were in Topia..."
"I gathered that much," I deadpanned.
"But which god?"
"You wouldn't know even if I told you."
Sirit was suddenly in front of me, tapping against the side of my head.
"You were getting stitches the sun cycle they taught dwellers about DOD.
I frowned, and not because he was insulting me again, but because he may have been right. There was every chance that I had no idea who DOD was because of one of my many medical emergencies. "So, where's Luciu then?" I turned, looking up to one of the marble platforms. "And will we be done before dinner? I'm starving."
"She's starving," Sirit repeated, shaking his head. "You'll have to go through another pocket to get there."
Cohen stepped up behind me, his hand shaping to the curve of my spine, his softly spoken words sounding just a little bit frightening.
"I'm going to push you through, and then you'll be on Luciu's main platform. One of the gods hosts a feast there every sun cycle, without fail."
"Yay, feast!"
"And..."
Cohen cut across me, his hand pressing harder.
"The cup is always at his side. You won't be able to miss him. He'll be wearing purple. It's his color."
"His god color?"
"One more thing."
Cohen completely ignored my question, stepping up so that the heat of his body hovered right behind me. He ducked his head, his words whispering over the sweep of my neck.
"This is going to hurt."
And then he pushed. The world around me shifted once again, closing in around me, and then opening up, revealing open blue sky above me and smooth rose-tinted marble beneath me. I was on my knees, having landed hard against the marble. Ouch. Totally not kidding about the hurting part. I glanced over my shoulder and saw that I was on the very edge of one of the floating platforms. Below was miles and miles of sky, and below that was a snow-capped mountain with a pine-covered base. The mountain itself was some kind of onyx stone, nothing that I recognized. I gulped, crawling away from the edge and then pulling up to my feet.
"Those bastard souls."
"We won't let you die, Willa," I mimicked, brushing off my boy clothes and shoving my hair out of my face. "We'll just teleport you onto a platform in the sky where you're definitely going to die, while we wait in our little safety cave."
"Excuse me?"
A little voice piped up to my left. I turned my head and promptly shrieked. The thing wasn't entirely human, but it certainly wasn't a god. It was almost naked, except for some kind of weird skin suit that covered about as much as ordinary underwear would cover, before stretching up over the stomach, over the chest, and then separating into straps to go over the shoulders. I could still see the general shape of everything. I wanted to cover my eyes just to be polite, but the thing had a face that didn't really allow you to look away. There was a nose, but it didn't seem to be breathing. There was a mouth, but I couldn't see any teeth. It had eyes, but there was a strange, waxy texture to them.
"What the hell are you?"
I hissed, before I could think of a more sensitive way to ask the question.
"I am a server," the thing replied. "My name is Jeffrey."
I blinked, my eyes moving to Jeffrey's strange covering. "No offense, Jeffrey, but I'm pretty sure you're a chick."
"A chick?"
Jeffrey cocked her head to the side, blinking that waxy gaze.
I am sorry, Sacred One. I do not understand.
I spluttered out a laugh. Sacred One?
Yes, Sacred One. I am a server, and you are a Sacred One. I was made to serve the Sacred Ones of Topia by the Sacred Creator.
Way too many proper titles in there, I muttered. So you're like a servant? And you're not real? You can't push me off this platform if I do something stupid? Jeffrey made a mechanical gasping sound. I took it as a no. So why'd he name you Jeffrey? I asked, trying to wipe the look of shock off her waxy face.
The names are distributed at random, Jeffrey answered. It does not matter, as long as they have a name to call when they require something.
I require something.
How may I assist you, Sacred One?
I looked up to her head, noting that the creator hadn't bothered to give her any hair at all. She was all smooth and bald and freaky. I need a cap, something to cover my hair, and whatever the hell it is you're wearing, I need that. Jeffrey let out another mechanical gasp. I sighed, rocking back on my heels to wait it out. Eventually, she jerked herself into a short bow and then turned and walked away, presumably looking for a cap. I doubted that any of the other Jeffreys were wearing caps, but they could just assume that someone had put it on me as a joke, because they definitely made jokes out of these things, right? Maybe that's what really happened to dwellers when they died. Maybe they turned into semi-naked topian-serving robots. That was worse than the hell we were all supposed to be going to. I was still pondering the living hell in front of me and the promised hell for the dead that I had always grown up believing in when Jeffrey returned, a cap in her hand. I tucked my hair away while she pulled off her covering, handing it over to me. I pulled my boy clothes off and changed into the skin thing, casting one very quick glance down. Mother freaking gods, I grumbled. Why am I always doing embarrassing things with my nipples showing? Cue mechanical gasp. Don't worry, I told Jeffrey, handing my clothes over to her. She stared at them and then dropped them, evidently preferring to be naked. I say stuff like that sometimes. I'm the god of embarrassment. She frowned.
Sacred Luke is the god of shame, Sacred One.
Did I say shame? I shook my head at her. Honestly, Jeffrey, it's like your head is full of empty air and proper titles. I raised a hand, cutting off the mechanical gasp. I need to find a cup now. Can you help me?
I will fetch a cup, Sacred One.
I caught her before she could disappear again. Hold up. It's a specific cup. Is there someone here called DOD? It's his cup. Jeffrey shook her head. Her waxy face was twisting in a particular way. I thought it was concern. Well, are there any special damn cups up here?
Sacred Abel has a cup, the Trophy of Staviti.
That name, Staviti. It was so familiar to me, but I had no idea why. I also didn't particularly care. Okay, great. Where's that?
Sacred Abel always has it with him, always by his side.
And Sacred Abel is where?
Eating.
Jeffrey pointed off to the side, through a maze of columns leading further into the center of the platform. I took off, weaving through the sky-high columns toward the sound of tinkling music and conversation. There were many columns set beneath the taller ones, acting as plant stands to cradle vine-like things that were snaking out to try and smother everything in their path. They'd even spilled from the columns to spread over the marble beneath my feet. Eventually, I began to see other people, robot servers in similar bare coverings, and then gods. They all seemed so big, wrapped in robes that dragged along the marble. Even the females seemed larger than life, with tall and willowy frames, their hair left free and flowing, dragging down their backs in a shining display of immaculate color. Hopefully Cohen hadn't lied to me because there was only one man wearing purple that I could see. He stood right beside a massive buffet table, every dish of food imaginable spread over it, the purple robes draping over his massive shoulders to pool on the marble. There was a cord around his waist, and there was a cup hanging off the cord. It looked more like a trophy, complete with a golden sheen and everything. I made my way over to him, grabbing a knife from the buffet table as I passed, and then upending a basket of bread and pulling out the little cloth sack that the bread had been sitting in. "Excuse me, Sacred One," I muttered, bumping into DOD. Slicing the knife through the cord and catching the falling cup into my sack, which I quickly hid behind my back.
"Watch yourself," he growled, spinning around, "or I'll push you off the damn platform, useless thing."
Wow, rude much? Apologies, Sacred One, I muttered, bowing just like Jeffrey had, backing a few steps away. I should have known better. Backing away without looking was never a thing that had worked for me before. I backed right into one of the willowy godwomen, who fell forward, also knocking over the man who had been standing next to her. I toppled toward the woman, and she pushed me away, sending me sprawling onto the man instead. I tossed out my hands to catch myself, forgetting that I was holding the knife. And that was how I stabbed a god in Topia. The man looked down at the knife protruding from his stomach, his eyes wide. I also stared at the knife protruding from his stomach, my own eyes wide. Nobody said anything. The whole platform had fallen into a heavy, shocked silence. Someone grabbed me by the back of my measly covering, hauling me to my feet and spinning me around. D.O.D. And he was pissed.
"Another faulty server,"
he muttered, planting a hand into the center of my chest and pushing, hard. The air closed in around me, the whole world turning black. I landed on my back, softly packed soil breaking my fall. The darkness didn't lift, and it took me a moment to realize that I was in another cave. I pulled myself up onto my elbows, seeking out the light of the entrance. There were some splotchy shapes blocking out most of the light, but I could still see it, so I forced myself to my feet and began to struggle in that direction. I pulled my prized trophy out of the bag, leaving the cloth behind in the cave while I ran my hands over the smooth metal surface. This better be worth it. Ahead of me, the shapes began to shift, forming into silhouettes. 5 silhouettes, to be exact.
"She's back."
I recognized Rome's voice as I finally made it closer to the entrance of the cave. It hadn't been the same cave, but a new cave altogether.
"You were right, Trickery. She did get sent to the banishment cave."
"I'm always right."
Sirit sounded like he was laughing, but it tapered off when I stepped out into the light and tossed my trophy into the dirt in front of them.
"What's with the blood?" Cohen asked,
his eyes on my left hand. "Stabbed a god," I told him. His expression went blank very quickly, but I was sure that he was hiding a laugh.
"Don't go drowning in guilt or anything."
"Well, he can't die from it. He's already dead, right?" Cohen smiled, a wide, crazy, disarming smile that caught my breath and wiped every thought out of my head. He was looking at me as though he'd only just seen me, but then his brows drew together, and he flicked his eyes up to the cap on my head, then down to my borrowed outfit. I tore my gaze away, almost immediately wishing that I hadn't, because 4 more sets of eyes were staring in the exact same way. I tried to drag an explanation out of my still blank mind when Aeris shook his head, drawing my full attention.
"What the fuck are you wearing?"
he growled, the usual smoothness of his silken voice disappearing altogether. Chapter 8. My first instinct was to hide, to try my best with stupidly tiny hands to cover my nakedness. Nakedness, which was probably tinted a nice shade of pink right about now. But as 5 sets of eyes continued to bore into me, eyes belonging to the soul shits who had dragged me into Topia to steal from the gods, I realized something. I realized that I didn't care. They could just deal with it. I dropped my hands to my hips, and with a voice as firm as possible, I said,
"Would have thought you boys would have seen more than your fair share of boobs and vag-"
A snort of laughter from Sirit cut me off mid-sentence, but they got the point. Before anyone said another word, Aeris whipped his far-too-valuable-for-me-to-ever-dream-of-owning shirt over his head. He then reached out a hand and curved it around my shoulder, pulling me across to stand before him. In a blink, the warm length of material was being pulled over my head, falling past my thighs. It clearly had been handmade for someone his size. I would have spent some time enjoying the soft material. It was woven from magic, or at least some form of special extra-silky blend reserved for extra-special souls, but I couldn't enjoy it. I couldn't because Aeris was now shirtless. Holy dweller babies. Could I have his dweller soul babies? Wait, no. Not what I meant. What I meant to say was, put your damn shirt back on. All of that golden sunshine skin, draped tightly over hard muscle, was horrible to look at. I was not going to spend any more than the next 30 to 40 clicks staring at him, before my tongue could actually fall out of my mouth. Sirit swept me up,
throwing me with ease over his shoulder.
Come on, Rox, he said as he started to move.
What the crap? Why did they keep doing that? I struggled against his hold, and even though I knew it was a bad idea, I kicked out as hard as I could at him, aiming to hurt. Of course, he didn't even seem to care. His strong arms tightened across me, halting my kicks.
Stop fighting me. You know you can't leave without touching one of us, and frankly, I don't trust you to make it without a concussion or more of your ass showing.
I knew I was bright red, partly from the blood rushing to my upside-down head as it hung down his back, but also from his words. When did this become my life? Upside down and naked, except for some weird skin suit and a borrowed shirt. Once she heard about my escapades, Emmy would either have a heart attack and become the first person to die from the simple act of me speaking, or most probably would refuse to believe any of it. The journey back from the banishment cave was a little rockier than the initial journey into Topia. Apparently, they didn't like their rejected beings having an easy escape route. A few times I thought I caught sight of something in the darkness, at least from what I could make out by lifting my head up from its hard resting place. Can you let me down now? I asked. My demand the 12th since we'd entered the cave. I can't feel my fingertips. They're going to fall off. And then, who will make your beds? Seriously, making beds without fingers is pretty difficult. Not that making beds with fingers isn't difficult either, because it is. You guys should really try it sometime. The screechy tone of my voice should have gone a long way to endearing me to the five souls. Surely they loved a screechy woman, didn't all men? I was just opening my mouth again when a hand wrapped around it. It was Cohen.
If you think you can manage it, shut up for a little bit and we'll be out of this cave. The only reason they aren't attacking us is because we hold this cup.
From the corner of my eye, I could see him brandishing the stolen cup. Narrowing my gaze on him, I was about to let him know exactly what I thought about being handled like that, when his words registered. Who were they? In that moment, the flickering shadows I'd been noticing around us started to become clear. Well, clear enough for me to see what was surrounding us.
Creatures. Living creatures.
Hundreds of them. Grotesque, ghost-like, wraith figures. Cohen must have seen the wide-eyed fear I was suddenly channeling, because he slowly removed his hand and leaned in closer to whisper to me.
When you are rejected by the gods, there's no escaping. You remain here until your physical form fades away, and then only the shadow creature is left.
I swallowed hard, trying not to either throw up or cry. Damn the gods. They sentenced the very beings who had already spent their sun cycle serving them to this kind of eternal torture.
Can we free them?
My voice was very low. I was afraid to draw their attention. There were so many of them, and even with this magic cup deterrent, it was scary. Rome slipped in next to his twin, and even though Sirit was walking pretty fast, none of them looked uncomfortable walking and whispering to me like this.
There's nothing left but anger and vengeance, the most giant of the Adcurse brothers said. If we free the spirits, they will wreak destruction across Minatzel, destroying the Nine Rings in no time. They can never be freed.
I shut up after that, trying my best not to stare at the scary surrounding us. Scary and sad. I wished that I could unsee them, but no such luck. Thankfully, Cohen hadn't been lying about us being close to the exit. The brightness we'd been moving toward was increasing, and I sucked in a deep breath at the junction between cave and outside. The blood rushed through my body as Sirit dropped me to my feet, keeping a tight hold on my shoulder, which was helpful against the weakness in my body. I was barely keeping myself up, but after all my carry-on, I needed to prove that I could stand on my own two legs. The other Adcurses stepped in beside us, forming a single line of souls. Their expressions varied from grim to stoic. I wasn't sure what to expect judging by that, but something told me it was going to be a bit of a rough journey to get out of this banishment cave.
Just take a deep breath, Willa,
Eris instructed from my right side, and then the six of us stepped through to the other side. Well, sort of. The actual transition between the worlds, this time, was akin to having my skin torn from my body by means of grating it off. The cave did not want to let us go, and right now I was biting my lip hard enough to taste blood so that I wouldn't scream out in pain. The agony felt like it lasted entire sun cycles, and when we finally found ourselves outside, with tall, thick trees surrounding us, I all but collapsed to my stomach. My hands ripped into soft, green grass, my breathing ragged as I fought against the last tendril of pain. I pushed myself partly up so that I could run my hands from my shoulders to wrists, obsessively checking to make sure that my skin was still intact. Fancy shoes appeared in my line of sight, a shadow blocking the light right above me.
You doing okay, Rox? It's a real bitch getting in and out of that banishment zone.
I knew it was Cullen. The pain-gifted soul had predictably been the first to recover. Hands fitted under my arms and lifted me to my feet. I found myself staring into his dark green eyes, a storm of darkness hovering just around the edges. He was smiling, right until he focused on my face. The darkness in his eyes expanded outward then, shading over his features like a roiling storm cloud. Reaching up, I tried to figure out what had happened to bring on that expression. Knowing me, it could have been anything. There could have even been a sleeper on my head. Those bugs hung above you, hidden in sticky white nets, and then when you were least prepared, they dropped into your hair. Most of the time, you didn't know about it, so they were able to burrow in and create a nest. They lived in your head, had their babies, and then when all their young were born, they would bite and kill you. Just so you wouldn't be able to tell anyone that they were there. My hands started frantically padding now. I'd seen a few sleeper deaths in the Seventh Ring, and I was not going out that way. Not a freaking chance in hell. Cohen's eyebrows slowly drew together as he watched me jump around, shaking my hair out, flipping my head upside down and everything.
Is it out?
I was shouting. Panic had me in its hold. I didn't fear much, but the creepy, multi-legged, weird-looking bug was high on my list. Almost right at the top. Only a few rungs below the recurring dream I sometimes had about someone dying and making me queen. Luckily, we no longer had monarchies, because it pissed the gods off too much to see us worshipping anyone other than them. So yeah, it was an irrational fear, but I still couldn't seem to shake it.
What is the Dweller doing?
Sirit stood next to his brother, both of them staring at me.
Has she lost her tiny mind? That was fast.
Eris joined them on either side, and the slightest of smiles was visible at the corners of his full lips.
Pretty sure she's trying to get a bug off her. I've seen this before in Blesswood.
Help me! I shouted. What was wrong with them? Were they hoping I'd die from a sneak sleeper attack? Cohen grabbed me then, huge hands wrapping around my biceps as he held me in place. I struggled for a click, before realizing that it was fruitless. I was never escaping his grip.
There's no bug on you, he said slowly, like he was speaking to an idiot.
Well, I spluttered out. Why were you staring at me like that? You went all dark and gloomy, and I thought it was a sleeper. The corner of his mouth twitched, which felt like amusement, although the corner of his eye did the same thing, and that was more like anger. Before I could try to salvage the relationship I thought I'd been building with these souls, Cohen freed my right bicep and traced a thumb over my lip.
You have blood on your face, he said. Were you hurt in the crossing?
I stared at him as his thumb shifted, rubbing back and forth along the slope of my bottom lip. If there really was blood on my face, he was only spreading it around, which was hardly surprising because he wasn't watching what he was doing. He was staring right into my eyes, an intensely focused look in his. Before I could answer, Eris was in my face.
How could she get hurt? We were assured it was the same for dwellers and us to cross. And we were touching her.
I found myself reaching out to comfort him, before deciding at the last moment that it was a bad idea. I bit my lip. That's all. I'm fine. I heard a snort from someone behind. Fair point. Fine might have been an exaggeration, but I wasn't hurt from the crossing to Mnatsol. I should have been more specific. Yael, who'd been silent and distant, didn't hang around any longer. He turned and started pushing his way through the thicker growth to the east. The rest of the ab curses gave me one more look over, before following their brother. Sirit nudged me, indicating I should go in front of him. Pretty sure I heard him mutter something about stopping me from breaking my neck, but I could have been wrong. As soon as I stumbled free of the alcove of trees and bushes we'd been in, I realized that nothing in the hilly area we were in was familiar. Sirit nudged me again. His brothers were already quite a few steps in front of us, so I picked up the pace. Where are we? I asked, leaves and debris kicking up under my feet as I jogged to keep up with their pace. This isn't where we entered Topia from.
He didn't answer at first, and I wondered if he was just going to completely ignore me. Seriously? I was here because of their need to procure an item which probably did not originally belong to them, no matter what their story had been. Why would the gods care about anything a soul had? Instinct told me it had been stolen from the gods by the ab curses in the first place, and the gods had wanted it back. I was the only sucker they could rope into helping them, and now I was going to face a certain, painful, death by angry deity.
The banishment cave is across the other side of Manatzel.
Sirit's voice was lazily drawled, like he could barely be bothered to answer.
We have a couple of sun cycles walk to get home.
What? I screeched, grinding to a halt. But I was in Topia for like one rotation. I was with the gods for like half a rotation. How could you five get to the cave in half a rotation if it's going to take us a couple of sun cycles to walk back? Sirit nudged me again, clearly not liking my refusal to walk.
Those sun cycles are going to turn into moon cycles if you don't start walking, Dweller. Don't make me carry you again. It'll be far less pleasant this time.
A red haze kind of washed over my eyes. I was so furious that when I opened my mouth, it actually surprised me that steam didn't emerge. You dragged me into this. How the hell am I going to explain being away from Blesswood for this long? Sirit must have realized that I wasn't going to move. He leaned down closer and spoke in fast, clipped tones.
To reach the banishment cave within Topia is fast, which is why we were able to get there so quickly. We are in Manatzel now, so there's no quick way back to the academy. We could have gone through Topia, but the risk was too great with you having stolen something from the gods. They tend to take those things seriously. They would have been searching for you very quickly. Add on the fact that you stabbed one of them, and, well, it's much safer on this side.
Okay, that all made sense. With a sigh, I turned and started walking again.
Oh, and rocks, Sirit added.
I swiveled my head around to see him.
We'll make sure no one at Blesswood punishes you for your absence. We have more than a little pull there, which is something you should remember.
Whatever, arrogant soul. Emmy was going to be out of her freaking mind with worry. She was probably going to start asking a whole bunch of questions until every damned living thing in the academy had been notified of my absence. There was no way that Yale was going to be able to persuade every single one of them to forget. That would require more power than it was really possible for a soul to possess. That would require the power of a god. I knew that there was nothing I could do right then to change the situation, but that didn't stop me from losing my mind with worry. Damn these souls. We walked for the better part of the sun cycle, picking our way through forests and winding trails that dipped through the mountains. My feet started aching far too soon to complain aloud about it without embarrassing myself, and slowly, the ache began to travel up my legs. Cohen was leading us, with Rome 2 steps behind him, me stuck in the middle, and the triplets bringing up the rear of our procession as they talked quietly amongst themselves. So, your mother? I tossed the words over my shoulder, trying to speak through the ache in my ribs. Is she still alive?
Is it normal for dwellers to ask each other that?
Sirit shot back, sounding amused. Sorry. I didn't sound sorry at all, but that was because of the wheezing. I just meant, there's 3 of you, and 2 of them. I paused, notching my hands on my knees and bending over to catch my breath. And those 2 are like the size of monsters. How'd she live through all of that? Does she have some kind of fertility gift or something? Do you have another bunch of brothers tucked away, more ab curses, a few unlucky sisters?
Beauty. Her gift is beauty,
Eris answered, ignoring my other questions. Oh, cool. Made total sense. Those boys had magical genetics. But that doesn't really explain the whole twin-triplet thing.
The whole twin-triplet thing?
Yale gave me a look that seemed to be part inquisition, part annoyance. Well, it's not really normal or common, I hedged, starting to walk again as he loomed closer. I mean, to have a set of twins and a set of triplets, that's pretty rare. I could feel him behind me, hovering. I'd obviously hit a touchy subject. Apparently, the twin-triplet thing wasn't something they wanted to talk about. I stubbornly focused my eyes on the ground ahead of me, pumping my little dweller legs as fast as they would go without actually breaking into a run. Because that would be obvious. It was much less obvious to power walk as fast as possible, even if it made me less certain that my legs were about to snap in half from overexertion.
We aren't normal or common,
Yale finally muttered, his hands gripping my hips and lifting me from the ground midway through a power stride. He pulled me up and then tossed me behind him. I thought I was going to land on my ass and probably break a few things, but I only landed against a hard chest, arms easily plucking me from the air. Eris. I could actually smell him. That faint combination of something addictive and sweet, and a hint of burning. I realized after a moment that it was the smell of smoking sugar plants. A very familiar smell to me, since the sugar plants had been one of our main export goods back at home. I blinked up at him, but he wasn't even looking at me. He was just striding on, as though I hadn't been tossed at him, and he hadn't caught me. As though girls flying through the air at him happened every single sun cycle. It probably did. How often do you guys sneak into Topia? I directed the question to Eris, since he was now much closer to me than the others. His golden eyes flicked down to me, switching between my eyes before moving over the rest of my face.
Every now and then. How often do you fall on your ass?
Every now and then. He shook his head, shifting me closer. One of his arms was hooked beneath my knees, the other banded across my back. He was cradling me like a baby.
You should be more careful,
says the guy who sneaks into Topia.
You concerned about us, Rox?
Sirit turned his head, his eyebrows lifting, his teeth flashing. No. I crossed my arms. It was hard to look impassive and intimidating while being cradled like a baby, so I settled on pouting. Eris smirked, taking in my expression before lifting me up. The world around me dropped away as the gold in his eyes became more prominent, almost shifting with energy as his face loomed above mine. Very suddenly, and completely without warning, his lips were pressing against the very corner of my mouth. I was simply too shocked to react. The kiss was barely even a kiss, but my body didn't seem to know that. The simple brush of his lips had sent spiraling heat all the way through me, locking down the air that should have been flooding in and out of my lungs. He pulled his head up, the smirk back in place, and continued walking. Meanwhile, I was pretty sure that he had just reached into my chest and pulled out my poor little dweller heart. Now it was laying somewhere behind us, in the dirt, beating pathetically.
Seduction is using his talent to change his rank,
Sirit shouted, his voice carrying with enough force to make me flinch. Up ahead, I could see Cohen and Rome stopping, the setting sun turning them into huge silhouettes as they spun around, threads of gold and yellow weaving over their bodies and highlighting the fact that I really shouldn't be encouraging them to compete over an imaginary ranking because they were far too powerful-looking to mess with, just for the fun of it.
That's cheating,
Cohen shouted back.
You cheat, you die,
Rome added, in an equally booming voice. Why the hell was he playing into this when he already seemed to know that it wasn't a real ranking? I told myself to come clean, to open up that mouth of mine that was always getting me into trouble, and tell them all what Yale and Rome were obviously keeping to themselves. Or maybe they weren't keeping it to themselves. Maybe they had completely disregarded the fact that the ranking had nothing to do with them and everything to do with their dorm numbers, because they didn't care. Because it was a competition. Because they were making it a competition. Because they clearly wanted one of their brothers to murder me. I had to come clean as soon as possible. We had reached the others by now, and they all seemed to be staring at Eris, waiting for an explanation. It was annoying me, because they couldn't just turn it into a competition without me agreeing. The whole thing was my idea. They couldn't just steal it. Plus, Eris was still cradling me like a baby, and for some reason it was making my temper bubble. I wanted to be standing on my own feet, preferably towering over all of them. My ranks, my rules, I blurted.
So we can use our...
Rome began, but I held my hand up, palm facing outward, hoping it would cut him off. Hell no. Crusher couldn't use his talent on me. He stared at my extended hand for a moment. He seemed confused. It was possible that nobody had ever tried to cut him off before. No, you can't. I twisted out of Eris's arms, landing on my hands and knees in the grass, pain shimmering up my body. I quickly pulled to my feet, brushing off my knees. Nobody is allowed to use their talent on me to change their rank, because that would be cheating, and, like I said, my ranks, my rules. I realized that I was doing the exact opposite of what I was supposed to be doing, but it seemed like a pretty promising way to prevent the ab curses from using their talents on me. Period.
We might as well stop here for the night, Cohen muttered,
breaking up the stare-off that I had going on with his brothers.
The dweller is getting cranky. She needs to be fed and watered and rested or whatever dwellers need.
You're getting us confused with Bolson. I shook my head, insulted at the comparison.
You don't need to be fed?
He prompted, his expression blank. Food would be nice.
And you don't need to be watered?
As in watered down, like showered, or given water? His blank mask cracked, just barely, but it was enough for me to glimpse the surprise beneath. He didn't answer me, trading a look with Rome. The others were similarly silent, their faces quickly morphing into the same locked-down expression.
You need help showering?
Sirit finally asked, evidently the first of them to cave, and ask the question that held them all up.
Dwellers don't shower on their own?
What? No, what? I meant...
We're getting nowhere with this.
Rome cut across me, raising his hand in my face. So they were competitive and vengeful. I should have never taught him that trick.
The dweller needs to tend to herself. They need regular breaks and sustenance, just like the Bolson.
You guys don't need regular breaks and sustenance? I asked, folding my arms and attempting to look down my nose at them. I knew all too well how much tending they needed. I knew because I watched people fetch them food, and I collected their laundry.
We don't need regular anything,
Rome returned, a laugh in his voice.
Exactly,
Yale added, his smile matching his brother's.
Our breaks are never normal, and food is never normal. That's how we stand apart from the Bolson and the dwellers. Everything about us is extraordinary.
Especially your egos, I sneered.
I said everything, didn't I?
Chapter 9. I shook my head, storming right past Yale, hitting him hard in the shoulder as I went. It hurt the way you'd expect bashing your shoulder into a boulder to hurt, but I didn't just have plenty of experience in feeling pain. I also had a decent amount of experience in stalking away from people angrily. I was in familiar and comfortable territory. Or at least I had been, until the sky started to darken, drawing tight and heavy, the clouds swelling as nighttime accelerated across the horizon. I stopped walking, my head drawn back, panic building somewhere at the base of my spine.
What the actual f-
The words were barely even out of my mouth before the ab curses were suddenly all around me. They were standing in a circle, their backs to me, and they were completely ignoring the doomsday sky, peering around us at the land instead.
Which god did you stab, dweller?
Rome growled, his eyes roving over the slope of a nearby hill. He was turned just enough for me to see half of his face. I didn't catch his name, I replied automatically. I found myself drawing closer to Rome, even though he appeared to be pissed at me. I couldn't help it. His was the broadest back. My shoulder bumped against his spine, and his arm suddenly twisted around, pulling me fully into him. I pressed my forehead to his shirt, keeping my hands tucked beneath my chin, and my eyes closed.
Please don't let me die right now,
I started whispering, as the world darkened further, the ground starting to rumble beneath our feet.
I'm not ready to die yet. I still don't know how to cook, and I'd like to punch someone in the face, not by accident, just once.
Shh,
Eris interrupted. He was standing beside Rome, evidently close enough to hear my panicked prayers.
You stabbed one of them. They aren't going to do what you say just because you ask nicely. They're not here for her.
Yale spoke up, his words dark.
Trickery. You would know better than us. Is it DOD? No, it's not a trick.
Sirit seemed to be speaking through clenched teeth.
He has no idea we stole the cup. Show yourself!
Cohen suddenly shouted, his voice carrying all the way to the cluster of trees we had left behind, almost seeming to shake their leaves. From the darkness caused by the stormy sky and the shelter of the short forest, a man suddenly materialized, walking toward us. He was cloaked in a blood-red robe, which swept over the ground, collecting sticks and dust as he swooped in toward us.
Raoul.
A collective growl announced the name from five different directions. I could even feel the name as it vibrated the entire way through Rome's body.
What's with the nightmare illusion, Raoul? What do you want?
Yale demanded, stepping away from the circle. I craned my head away from Rome,
trying to see the man better. It was difficult because as soon as Yale moved, so did the others. They tightened the circle around me. Eris and Cohen spinning around to face the man called Raoul, though Cohen still had one eye on the rolling hills behind us.
"It's not an illusion,"
Raoul answered, his voice oddly high-pitched for his imposing stature. It made him sound a little more unhinged, as though he would break out into a maniacal laugh at any moment.
"It's just a bit of fun. Who are you hiding back there?"
"Cohen's current plaything. He seems to like this one, so we're trying not to scare her off."
"I thought fear was a big part of Cohen's playtime."
This time, Raoul did laugh maniacally. I shivered, huddling back into Rome. I was pretty sure that Raoul was a god, since he was wearing one of those flowing colored robes, and he would have been considered massive standing next to a normal soul. He just looked average standing next to Yale. Either way, I didn't want to look anymore. I didn't even care that they were making me sound like a dim-witted dweller toy. I just wanted the sky to go back to normal and for Raoul to stop talking because his voice was creepy as hell.
"Let's get to the point where you tell us why you're here,"
Rome said, probably well aware of the way I was trembling against his back.
"I think you all know why I'm here,"
Raoul shot back, his laugh fading away.
"There hasn't been another Chaos God in hundreds of life cycles. Whenever one gets close, Staviti finds a way to kill them. I need someone to help me. Someone who has access to Blesswood. Someone to find the Chaos student and protect them until they finally reach the threshold of power. After that, they are free to die. Staviti can kill them all he likes. It won't stop them from joining me."
"Tiny problem with this plan,"
Yale replied, a smirk in his voice.
"We don't really want another Chaos. I mean, no offense, Raoul, but it's pretty fucking exhausting."
The god's already dark features hit blackout level then. I counted my loud heartbeat as I waited for whatever horrible thing was about to come from his fury.
1, 2, 3, 4.
His next words burst out in a swarm of whispers, trickling through the air and somehow filling the wide spaces around us.
"I'm not sure you all know that I don't take kindly to my suggestions being denied. You five have ignored our rules for far too long. Don't forget that you stand here among the dirt dwellers, growing weaker by the sun cycle. You wouldn't want one of the gods to take advantage of that, would you? I can make sure that you have no more troubles here. All you have to do is find my beta."
Rome's arm tightened minutely around me. I wouldn't have noticed if I wasn't completely aware of every single part of my body pressed against his. Of course, that was far less worrying than the fact that his arm had tightened. Why was he worried? Shit, of course he was worried. This was a god. Even if there were 5 ab curses, it wouldn't matter. One god could annihilate them in an instant. No, that was not okay. What the hell was I going to do? In my panic, I had missed some of the boy's reply to the veiled threat from Raoul. I caught the tail end of Sirit saying,
"Would be a mistake to try us. We take orders from no one, not even you."
Raoul grinned then, and somehow that was even more sinister than the previous dark scowl.
"We'll see, boy, we'll see. Stay safe out here tonight. Looks like a storm is coming."
With that not-at-all-creepy parting line, he turned, and in a flash of red robes, he was striding back into the trees. I felt it, the moment he left Minatzel. The air around us thinned out somewhat, even though the storm above seemed to be growing in ferocity, which said nothing for the 5 souls still surrounding me. Their bodies seemed to swell as their muscles tensed. I struggled against Rome, needing to get down so I could see them all better, so that I could ask them what the hell just happened. The strength-gifted soul released me, keeping one hand on me as I stumbled. Somehow he knew I was going to stumble. Okay, let's be real here. Everyone knew I was going to stumble. I just wasn't used to anyone knowing this fact and preparing for it. Don't get used to it, I forcefully told myself. The ab curses weren't going to be there to pick me up forever. I had to remember that. I had to step back from all the confusing emotions they instilled in me.
Sometimes they almost treated me like an equal, like when they saved me from being sentenced to death by sacrifice, just because of a stupid competition. Or just before, when they had formed a circle around me to protect me, as though I was someone worthy of protection. A dweller that actually meant something to them. A dweller that meant something, period. And then there were all the other times. The times when they treated me like dirt beneath their feet, the way they were supposed to treat me. I needed to make sure I never forgot my place. Dwellers who did that ended up with a fate worse than death. They became Jeffrey, or something. I didn't really know. I was just assuming that becoming a Jeffrey was the worst thing that could happen to our kind. Time to remind them all that I was an emotional dweller. Which one of you souls is going to tell me what the freaking hell just happened right then? Going on the attack felt natural. How in the hell did a god just walk out of Topia and talk to us? What the hell is this weather storm thingy? What the hell are you five hiding that means you can walk into Topia, and you know about the god's colors, and what the hell? I might have been yelling toward the end there, which might have caused lots of huffing and puffing when I finished. Damn, I needed to get into shape. Clearly making beds was not enough to build stamina. As I heaved, five sets of eyes observed me, each sparkling unnaturally in the darkness around us. Was it possible that these souls were extra special? Sure, they had told me that they were, but I figured that it was just their arrogance speaking. I hadn't really taken them that seriously. Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention. And why wasn't anyone answering me? I was about to go dweller crazy on them again when the sky opened above us, and Raoul followed through on his storm promise. I was scooped up by someone, and then we were running. It was only the hint of gold and the summery scent of burning sugar wrapping around me that told me it was Eris. He tucked me close to his body so that no trees smashed into my limbs, and then they were full-on sprinting.
"We need to get to higher ground," Seert shouted.
He looked to be out the front, leading the way.
"I know a spot."
Higher ground? It never rained enough in Minatsal to worry about water rising above the ground. I was starting to think that I knew nothing about this world, or the gods. I probably should have paid better attention in class. Emmy surely knew all of this. It was almost pitch black around us now, and since we were running at full sprint, through a tightly knit forest, it was pretty scary. I could barely even focus on the trees flashing past us, and the knowledge that I was probably going to be smashed against one soon was enough to have my face pressing into Eris's chest. A girl could get used to being pressed against an Abkhurs chest whenever the world decided to go insane. One benefit to all the shitty drama they brought into my life. I sensed they were talking above my head, but by this stage, I was too tired and cold to even listen. I had been walking for almost a full sun cycle, which was something I was sure I had never done before, and now my body was punishing me for it. My ears refused to work, so I let my mind drift off. I must have dozed off fully, because obviously a crazy storm and being lost in Minatsal was the perfect situation to get comfortable enough in to have a little nap. I was going to blame the exaggerated 40 million miles we'd walked that sun cycle. It had nothing to do with Eris and the comfort of his strong arms. As I opened my eyes, I realized that it was still dark and cold outside, but the cave we were in was awash with warmth from a huge fire right in the center of the round area. A rock wall was on my right side, warmth pressing along my left. Shifting my head, I saw the silky strands of golden black hair. Seret. From what I could see over his huge body, next to him were his brothers. Well, the other two parts to the trio anyway. It didn't look as if Cohen and Rome were in the cave with us. Hopefully they hadn't been abducted by angry gods or smashed against a tree. As I shifted slightly, I realized that I needed a bathroom break. Immediately. My bladder was at the bursting point. I wiggled around to get my hands on the rough ground. My head was pillowed on a shirt, which thankfully was not mine. I still wore Eris's shirt, and it was now dry and toasty warm. Realizing there was not enough space on either side of me to get up without using Seret for leverage, I attempted to use my stomach muscles to pull myself up. Of course, I didn't really have any stomach muscles, so all I managed to do was flap around like an idiot. A heavy arm draped across me, and I almost peed myself. Come on, gods, this is so not funny! A flash of light from outside drew my attention, and before I could say anything, the three souls around me were up on their feet and standing in front of me. I understood why the moment the red robes came into view. Raoul stood there, no expression on his face, just the tiniest of fires burning in his eyes.
"I will have my beta,"
was all he said. And as Eris, Yale, and Sirit started for him, he shot out a blast of energy that materialized in front of him as a sphere of loosely held smoke. It rose above us all, circling around the top of the cave, lit from within the sphere by some kind of milky, glowing light. My eyes took a while to adjust to the glare, and even though I was terrified, I stumbled forward in the hope that I could help the Abcurses if they were in trouble. This glow couldn't kill them, right? What was it even doing? Their huge shadows were all I had to aim for, so I headed toward the one shaped like Sirit, since he was the closest. The intensity of the glow shot up again, and I was worried that my current blindness was moments from becoming permanent. I continued pushing my way forward, hoping that I wasn't about to stumble into the fire. There was a roar in the direction of the doorway, and this one I recognized as Rome. The giant soul was not happy, and I would not like to be in his way when he lost it. I kind of hoped that Raoul got crushed. Deciding I needed to get to Sirit sooner, I started to sprint, which, of course, had my feet tripping up against some of the spare firewood, propelling my body forward and sending me flying into the darkness. Because of the momentum I had built up sprinting to get to Sirit, I managed to launch impressively high into the air, my body sailing across the cave, the glare of light becoming so intense that even with my eyes squeezed tightly closed, I was still blinded. My mind reacted by trying to repel the force, shutting down all of my senses. I had only half a click to see Sirit's horrified face. He was reaching for me, but it was too late. A surge of something hot pierced my heart, branding me painfully as my breath was cut off. I tried to choke back some air as I began losing height, plummeting toward the ground, but there was no air to be had. I prepared myself for impact. I should have hit the ground long ago, but for some reason my fall continued on. Why couldn't I breathe? And why did my chest feel like something had sliced it in two, and now a hot branding iron was slowly burning a path through my heart? Had I been hit with a god bolt or something? Was there such a thing as a god bolt?
Willa!
Someone was shouting my name, but it scarcely registered as I continued to slowly die, or whatever was happening to me. When my body finally hit the ground, I was barely conscious enough to even feel the impact. It didn't even feel that rocky, and it smelled good. Like summer sun cycles. Eris. Well, at least if I was going to die, I was going to do it in the arms of a golden soul. With that thought, my heart stuttered one last time, and then everything went dark. Shouting was the first thing my subconscious registered.
How did Raoul even make it past you two?
Yale was angrier than I had ever heard before, his voice thundering around the room. I was afraid to open my eyes and bring attention to myself. What happened? Had I fallen asleep again? Why did my chest ache and crap? Raoul had been there? And a weird glowing smoke ball. The Abcurses had been about to fight him, and I had tripped? Fallen? Did I fly? My eyes snapped open, and I was up on my feet in an instant. Everything spun around me, but that didn't stop me from scanning my surroundings, my heart rate only settling when I realized there were five souls standing in a wall of muscle across the front of the cave. Raoul had not hurt any of them. Safe. My Abcurses were safe. I mean, someone else's Abcurses. Their mother's Abcurses. They all had their backs to me, forming a line of defense between me and the outside world. Eris, Yale, and Cohen were shirtless now, and I realized I had been laid across the soft surface of their clothing. Looking down at myself, I blinked a few times as I tried to remember what had happened after I tripped over the firewood. My hand dropped to rest against my chest, right above my heart. The pain had been excruciating. I wasn't surprised that my mind had blocked it out. Right then, as the memories crashed back into me, my stomach heaved, and I leaned over to dispel whatever small amounts of food had been left in my body. Thankfully, it had been a while between meals, so there wasn't much for me to lose. I felt the five Abcurses as they moved toward me. What the crap? I literally could feel them. In my chest, their energy moved closer, and I had no idea how that was possible. As soon as they were around me, the pain stopped. One moment I was suffering, and the next, I was standing confusedly, feeling completely normal.
Rox?
Seerit's hand was on the back of my neck, turning me around to face him.
You okay?
He was holding out one of the shirts from the ground, and a hollowed-out rock filled with water. I didn't ask about the rock. It held the perfect imprint of a pair of knuckles. So I wasn't getting into a fight with Rome anytime soon.
Thanks, I muttered,
taking the rock and the shirt. I wasn't sure what the shirt was for, but I made good use of the water to wash out my mouth before walking past them to the entrance of the cave. I needed fresh air. I needed to see that the world was still whole and beautiful and not burning to the ground in a fit of godly rage. I took a few steps and then stopped as a small thrum of pain fissured through my chest. I frowned, dropping the shirt and curling all of my fingers around the rock, as though I needed something to brace myself with. I took another step, and it happened again. I sucked in a deep breath and shook my head, hurrying to the mouth of the cave. The pain grew worse, and then it suddenly disappeared. Eris was at my side.
"Do you feel any different?"
he asked me, his stunning features dark with emotion. Maybe he was concerned or suspicious. Maybe he was trying to determine whether Rau's ball of smoke and light had altered me in a dangerous way. The question was, if it had, what were they going to do about it? Would they put me down like a rogue bolson? I'm sore, I admitted, shaking my head and turning away from him. I should have known that blocking him out wasn't a thing that would happen. He simply plucked me up from my feet, pulling me against his body, and turned his face back to the inside of the cave.
Let's go. He announced. We should get her back to Blesswood and have someone look at her. We can't involve anyone else in this,
Cohen returned, appearing in my line of sight and taking the lead.
No one can know about Rau, and what happened.
Eris fell into step behind him.
I wasn't talking about that. She might have bruised ribs or something. She might get sick. We have no idea what he hit her with.
Cohen didn't reply, but I wasn't even listening anymore. I was facing Eris, my chin tucked against his shoulder, my hands looped behind his neck. The knuckle-imprinted rock was banging lightly between his shoulder blades with every step. I didn't want to let go of it for some reason. He was holding me with one arm, his hand settling into my waist as he stuck me against his front, and a little off to the side so that he could walk easily. My legs were just kind of dangling. I considered wrapping them around his waist, just to be a little more comfortable, but deciding against it. I was too numb to do anything. Too numb to ask questions. Not that it stopped them from springing up inside my head. What the hell was that ball of light and smoke? I ran into it, didn't I? It hit me in the chest, didn't it? Am I going to die now?
No, you're not going to die,
Yale growled. My eyes flew open, connecting with his. He was walking behind Eris, his expression as dark as everyone else's seemed to be. Shit, was I asking those questions out loud?
Yeah,
Seerit answered. I frowned, moving to clap a hand over my mouth. The only problem was, the knuckle-imprinted stone was still in my hand. Yale jumped forward, plucking the stone out of my hand when it was less than an inch away from smashing it into my nose.
Try not to make things worse, he begged.
That's mine! I pointed to the stone. He looked down at the stone, his eyebrows arching.
Sure, Rox. I won't steal your rock. I'll just keep it safe until it no longer presents a danger to your face.
I nodded once, satisfied. Eris's chest rumbled a little, a laugh barely audible as we walked. I rested my chin against his shoulder again, snuggling closer. Blame the exhaustion. His free hand landed on the back of my thigh, holding me a little more securely. I fought the urge to wrap my legs around him yet again, but then decided there wasn't much point in fighting it. I was already growing attached to these souls. Maybe it was because I secretly wanted to be one of them. I wanted to be badass and superior too. I wanted to take on the gods and have a superpower. I wanted them to give me a nickname based on my superpower, instead of based on the fact that I was always falling over. Or maybe it was all the near-death experiences. I suppose that could form an attachment of sorts. Whatever it was, I was giving up fighting it. They could kick me out of the group if they wanted to. They could push me onto my ass and leave me behind. But maybe they wouldn't. Maybe they would keep me and teach me how to be badass, while saving me from getting killed by all the other souls out there who definitely wouldn't appreciate my newfound badass persona.